Welcome to the NACE Clinical Highlights Show. I'm Dr. Greg Sherman, Chief Medical Officer for NACE, the National Association for Continuing Education. I'll be your moderator for today's podcast. Joining me for this discussion on From RCT to Real World, Expert Interpretations in Asthma Care are two experts in this field. First, Dr. Diego Maselli. Dr. Maselli is an Associate Professor of Medicine and the Interim Chief for the Division of Pulmonary Diseases and Critical Care for UT Health San Antonio in San Antonio, Texas, where he's also the Director of the Severe Asthma Program for the University Health System. Diego, great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Greg. It's very nice to see you.
Also joining us today is Dr. Najira Lagogo. Dr. Lagogo is Professor of Internal Medicine within the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine, as well as the Asthma Program Director for the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Najira, glad you could be here with us as well.
Thank you, Greg. I'm really happy to be here.
This podcast is one of several activities covering the use of biologics in patients with severe asthma that culminates in our Fall Conversations in Pulmonology live virtual symposia this year with two episodes on October 21st and December 2nd. We're going to jump into the conversation today a little bit differently than usual for this podcast. So, Najira, I'm going to ask you to start off with a discussion of one of your cases and then ask Diego to provide some commentary.
Thank you. This is quite a privilege and something we do all the time. So I'm excited to share a case with Diego. So, Diego, this is a 44-year-old patient of mine with severe persistent asthma on high-dose ICS/LABA, referred for initiation of biologic therapy. Four exacerbations in the past year with year-round exacerbations, no seasonal variability. She's not OCS dependent. The eosinophils that I checked at baseline were 170 cells per microliter, IgE positive for dust mite and pollen. Her past history is significant for allergic rhinitis, nasal polyps. She's obese with a BMI of 38. A 12-pack year history of smoking that she quit many years ago. And we did some PFTs and her FEV1 was 74%.
Najira, thanks for the case. Diego, I'm back to you. So Najira is presenting a patient presenting for biologic therapy. And after hearing her case scenario, what kind of things are you thinking about?
Well, first of all, the first thing that comes to mind is definitely a patient that's uncontrolled. When we see a patient with four exacerbations per year, we definitely have to do something about this. As you know, exacerbations will bring steroids and a lot of problems for our patients. So definitely that caught my eye, and I think is an appropriate referral for a potential biological consideration. The other thing that caught my eye were the comorbid conditions. Najira mentioned that the patient had some nasal polyps, some allergic rhinitis. That starts to, you know, form in my brain some ideas of what therapies may we be considering. And obviously, the patient already has some decrease in the lung function with an FEV1 in the kind of low 70s, as she mentioned. So these are some of the things that I'm thinking. Now, she did mention some characteristics of the patient with regards to biomarkers. She mentioned the eosinophils, which are mildly elevated and some positivity for the allergy testing. But I would want to kind of know a little bit more about perhaps the other biomarkers that we use in asthma. So, Najira, I'm not sure if you have this information because sometimes we don't have FeNO in all of our patients, but I'm not sure if you have the FeNO level and also the IgE. It's something that I would be very interested in knowing.
Yeah, we actually checked FeNO on all our patients, and her FeNO was 45 parts per billion, and her total IgE was 280.
Oh.
Yeah, Diego, what information does that give you beyond the eosinophils?
Yes, I mean, I think we're now using these biomarkers to identify really what's happening behind the scenes in our patients, and I think the biomarkers gives a sense of what are some of the inflammatory pathways that might be activating in our patients. Interestingly, the biomarkers now can give us some sense of even of prognosis. There are some studies out there, prospective studies, that have shown that patients that have high eosinophils or high FeNO, for example, can predict future exacerbations and potentially poor outcomes in asthma. So I always, when I see someone with frequent exacerbations, kind of want to know, well, this is someone that has high biomarkers. It may predict future exacerbations. And I think the second part is that obviously we have now biologicals that target these pathways. So by knowing more information about our patients, we can start thinking maybe, well, we can select this biologic or this other one based on these findings.
I think that's real helpful for our audience that's listening. So Diego, since Najira presented the case, and I think she knows what happened, given what you know about this particular scenario, tell me, like, what are the key things that are going to help you pick a specific agent for this patient?
Yes, well, you know, when we're deciding on our patients, what therapy we're going to use, we use many things. Definitely, we're going to be using biomarkers. In this case, we see a modest elevation of the eosinophils. We do see a high exhaled nitric oxide, a high FeNO, as Najira mentioned. So that already I start to think potentially we might want to do specific pathways targeting potentially the IL-13 pathway. Also, and I mentioned this before, the fact that the patient has nasal polyps, we do not get a lot of information in this case. If this is, you know, a lot of nasal polyps, multiple surgeries in the past, how bad are these nasal polyps affecting our patient? But that also kind of ringed a little bit of a bell in my brain about maybe potentially going one pathway or the other. So in this case, just the comorbid conditions for asthma that the patient has and also the biomarkers. And I think I would try to choose a agent that would target the IL-13 pathway, potentially the eosinophil migration in this case. So I would choose possibly in this case dupilumab as an option for this patient.
Thanks, Diego. Najira, back to you. You know the patient, you know what happened. You know, what kind of data from the real world would influence, you know, your decision making, and would you have ultimately done anything different for this patient than Diego would?
Well, first, you know, the high exacerbation frequency makes me think this patient is likely eosinophilic. And the eosinophils were 170 cells per microliter, but we know from post-hoc analyses of phase 3 studies and real-world studies that eosinophilia is highly variable, and particularly someone who's exacerbating quite frequently, they may be getting oral corticosteroids, and so you need to keep that in mind and look at historical eosinophils. There's also a telltale sign. These patients will often say that oral corticosteroids are, quote, miracle drugs. They feel dramatically better on oral corticosteroids. When I hear that in the clinical history, I start thinking this is potentially an eosinophilic patient. The patient has all three biomarkers elevated. They clearly have type 2 inflammation and nasal polyps. So the good news for this patient is she qualifies for everything. And when you look at studies on response, she has a pretty good chance of responding to any of the therapies we have on the market currently. So there'll also be a component of shared decision-making about what her expectations are, how frequently she wants to take the medication, whether she's willing to inject herself at home or wants to do it in a supervised setting. And then we'd have to make a decision about which biologic to pick. So I'm somewhat non-committal, I know, in my answer at this point, because it is actually a discussion that the patient would have with you. Sometimes they tell you, well, you just pick whichever one you want, but they often surprise you and have some strong feelings either way, which direction they want to go in.
So I think that's helpful. And obviously, it's the art of medicine, but blending in the science. But there's real-world data that's come out since these drugs have been approved, and I wonder what kind of advice you might be able to give this patient as you're counseling them on biologic therapy, what kind of improvement in the symptoms they might expect based on the real-world data that's come out of some of these biologic agents. Najira?
Yeah, so response is actually multi-component, and I always tell my patients this. You know, you could expect improvements in exacerbations. That's the primary goal. We are aiming for that. If you don't have that, we are going to have to do a switch to something else. We are looking for better control. That's a little more tricky, and we may touch on this in future cases, but it's a little harder sometimes to achieve control because symptoms may not be primarily coming from asthma or particularly from inflammation. You're looking for some lung function improvement in this patient. There's room to improve, so it's nice to see an improvement. And if she were oral corticosteroid dependent, we'd be looking to free her from oral corticosteroids. About 35% of patients are going to be responders in all four components. Those are people we might call super responders. And maybe those are the people who could go on to achieve remission in the future. On the other hand, you know, about 60% or so are going to respond pretty well in some components, maybe not so well in others. And that's why shared decision making is critical, because you're going to have to decide if that partial response is durable enough to continue a particular treatment or not. And then about 10% of the time, you just get it wrong. You think you picked the right pathway based on biomarkers and history and comorbidities, and the patient simply doesn't respond. I think that's primarily because we aren't very good at picking what the dominant inflammatory pathway is. And this patient clearly has three inflammatory pathways. And so in that case, you clearly are going to have to make a decision to move on to a different therapy. And I just set those expectations up front with the patient. But most importantly, I ask the patient what they want. And often it's not an 100 ml improvement in FEV1 or reduction in eosinophils. It's things like playing with my grandchildren and laughing at a party without coffee and going outside. So, you know, if you don't give them that, they don't quite, frankly, care about the 100 ml improvement in lung function. So you really need to know what the patient wants out of it, because they will have very high expectations if they agree to go on a biologic.
I think that's a great summary. I wonder, for a patient who's having multiple exacerbations, is there a specific sort of number that our colleagues can, you know, advise their patients you can expect a, you know, reduction in exacerbations by biologic? Diego, are you familiar with any specifics that our colleagues can use?
Yes, I think if you look at the average or real-world studies, I think the majority of the studies show, the evidence suggests that these patients experience more than 80% reductions in exacerbations over 12 months. So it's a pretty good reduction there.
Fascinating. Yeah, that's pretty dramatic. So it sounds like both of you are sort of on the same page, but a fair amount of shared decision-making to pick the right agent for this particular patient. Great. I think it's a great discussion. I always love talking to both of you. I always learn something new. But we have time for a second case that's a little bit of a different scenario. And I'm going to present this one. And I'll present this and ask you, Najira, for your feedback first. This is a 50-year-old male with allergic asthma who actually has been treated with omalizumab for the past 12 months, and has had two exacerbations in the last 12 months requiring oral corticosteroids, but no hospitalizations. He has had high rescue inhaler use, about 2 canisters a month. And he comes in wanting a second opinion because he was expecting to feel better. When you review his chart, he had 4 exacerbations in the 12 months prior to starting omalizumab. And they actually put him on the omalizumab after an exacerbation resulted in a hospitalization. His symptoms seemed or still present, but by exacerbations are maybe better than prior to the biologic. And his wife is disappointed that the symptoms and exacerbations have not improved more. Yeah. And before you go and see him, Najira, you look in his biomarkers after being on omalizumab. He has an IgE of 190. His eosinophil count is 250. His FeNO is 30. And he's got a positive RAS test. So with that case scenario, Najira, would you say this patient has responded to his biologic treatment or no? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a good question. So I would venture to say no. it's a little controversial because we have a 50% reduction in exacerbations. But a patient using 2 canisters a month of SABA is at very high risk of dying from asthma. And that is an indicator of very poor control. Now, I am a little cautious in that sometimes people use SABA because of behavioral reasons. They always used it. They puff it whenever they feel any kind of symptoms. But if he is really requiring that much SABA use and still having 2 exacerbations, then to me, that would, although it is a partial response that I mentioned earlier, you know, your partial response could be quite close to the non-responder side or quite close to the amazing responder side. It is a spectrum. And I would not be happy about the SABA use. And I would feel compelled to tell this patient that I'm not so convinced this has been an adequate enough response to therapy.
Diego, are you addressing this patient any differently to determine whether they're a responder, partial, or non-responder?
No, I think very similar to what Nigeria mentioned. I think it's a spectrum, definitely a spectrum of symptoms and exacerbations. She mentioned the 50% reduction, which is, if you think about it, is significant. I always ask my patients directly, and I use one simple question, and I say, is this therapy worth your while? Be really, you think it's useful for you? And it's very interesting that in this, they mentioned the fact that the wife is kind of like interfering there and saying, giving additional information. I think that's important because patients are like, I'm feeling better. But when you go with the families are like, no. Keep asking more questions and you'll figure out that he's not doing good. So if the patient tells you I'm doing great, then that's good. If the patient is hesitant, that tells me, or, you know, shrugs the shoulders, it's, you know, I'm not sure, then that's when you start probing a little bit more. And the fact that the patient's using the canisters very frequently, like Nigeria mentioned, that is already a sign that the patient, we can do something better about it. We can be a little bit more ambitious and try to potentially consider switching to a different agent, particularly if the patient is willing to switch. Because sometimes patients will be like, no, you know what? This is better, and I'm really, let's not rock the boat, you know, type of deal. So it's a lot of shared decision with the family, and obviously what we see, and sometimes we can bring other things, you know, to the table, you know, exacerbations and such. So it's very important to just keep asking questions if you're unsure.
Okay. So, Najira, the patient is sitting in front of you with his wife. What are you going to recommend you switch his therapy to, and why?
You know, one of the things that was a little bit interesting to me is to have a 50-year-old allergic patient. You know, I'd really be curious whether this is a lifelong asthma patient. It's a little unusual to develop adult-onset asthma with allergy. And I'd really want to know exactly whether we think that allergic disease is driving his exacerbations. I would also ask some questions about comorbidities, particularly type 2 comorbidities, like atopic dermatitis and nasal polyps. And then, you know, we look at biomarkers. So here, his IgE is 190 on omalizumab. We know omalizumab affects IgE levels, increasing the total IgE. So in fact, it probably wasn't too terribly high to begin with. And I would have probably not gone in that direction unless I was really convinced that the patient was highly allergic. He has eosinophils. Omalizumab reduces eosinophils about 40%, which means to me he's an eosinophilic patient. His FeNO's high, and that indicates IL-13 modulated inflammation, and then he has positive allergen sensitivity. So I think a good option for this patient would be either targeting eosinophils with IL-5 therapy or using dupilumab and or tezepelumab, which will affect eosinophils, tezepelumab reducing the eosinophils and dupilumab affecting the ability for eosinophils to chemotaxin to tissue, and also blunting the IL-13 response and reducing, both of those will reduce IgE over time. And again, it would come back to how frequently the patient wants to take the medication, and perhaps some other telltale signs in the comorbidities in order to determine the best way to move forward with this particular patient.
All right, Najira, that was excellent. Diego, what are you going to tell this patient?
Yes, it is a difficult case. Obviously, a patient's already not responding to a medication that has shown to be effective in that patient just like this. So you're already kind of like thinking, oh man, we're going to have to find a new option. I agree with the Jerry. We have multiple options as well. You know, when we see the fact that this patient had a high IgE and a RAS positive did not respond well to omalizumab, you wonder, like she mentioned, well, is this maybe not the right pathway that's activated? Are we looking at eosinophilic inflammation that's really driving? So definitely doing a class switch to an IL-5 would be a consideration. And definitely the other biologicals that target the other pathways, tezepelumab and dupilumab, could be considered. You see, both of us did not commit really an answer to which one we would use. And this is just a real life and a real experience that we have on a day-to-day clinics. You know, fortunately, we continue to see good results. Switching has been beneficial in the majority of studies out there. So it's good news for our patients that we have options for them. So you see, again, I don't commit too much in this one.
Well, ultimately, we realize that despite whatever we want to recommend, the patient has to be able to get it, and there may be some insurance realities of helping to sway our decision. But I think your approaches are pure and trying to get to the right pathway, and that's key. So before we sign off, Najira, Diego, any final thoughts you'd like to share for our colleagues that are listening about severe asthma? Najira, you first.
You know, I had mentioned briefly that you should be cautious about relying on asthma control as the reason for switching. So I think it's quite critical to understand that although the patient may still have symptoms, they may not be inflammatory in nature. So if there's discordance between symptom control and all your other markers in that the patient has exacerbation reduction, oral steroid sparing, lung function improvement, but is reporting a lot of symptoms, then I really think you need to delve into those symptoms a little further and start thinking about whether there are alternative reasons for persistent symptoms and not going immediately to switching the biologic, because not all symptoms can be treated with biologics. Particularly people have comorbid depression, anxiety, obesity. They may have undiagnosed sleep apnea, heart failure, deconditioning, and vocal cord issues that need to be addressed. And so although switching is important, I think we should do our due diligence to figure out if it's actually necessary. In this case, I believe it is necessary, but in some cases, you kind of have to work on all the other problems before you consider switching the biologic.
Great points, Najira. Thanks so much for sharing. Diego, any final thoughts for our audience?
No, I think I agree with Najira, definitely. You know, part of our job in our asthma clinics is to confirm the diagnosis of asthma. And like she mentioned, sometimes these are outside forces that are generating some of the symptoms. So we have to do an effort to tease out if it's really asthma that's driving these symptoms, particularly because these medications have worked well in patients. So we do see those very good responses. So when we see someone that's not responding to the usual self, we have to at least stop and think, is there something else that we are missing before doing the switching? And sometimes, you know, we revise everything and we have to try a different therapy. As I mentioned, we have options now. So that's always very good.
Great. Well, thank you both so much. Unfortunately, we are out of time for today. I want to thank you both, our faculty, Dr. Diego Maselli and Dr. Najira Lugogo, for taking the time to discuss these cases with me today. It's always a pleasure working with both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you're interested in learning more about managing asthma with biologic therapy, Join us on either October 21st or December 2nd for our live virtual program, Conversations in Pulmonology, where we'll take these concepts and discuss them in greater detail. If you've missed those dates by the time you're listening to this podcast, check out the enduring webcast of the program or a decision point activity to help you refine your skills in caring for these patients. Please like us on Facebook at NACE CME to be part of our online social media community and get access to other content and programs that we share. And finally, a big thank you to you, our audience, for joining us for this podcast. I hope you've learned something new you can bring back to your practice. We look forward to having you join us for other upcoming podcasts in the future.